You're listening to Community Radio KGNU Boulder, Denver and Fort Collins as we continue our coverage of the upcoming primaries with another candidate who is on the Democratic primary ballot for Congressional District 2. That's the seat currently held by Jared Polis. We have Jonah Goose in the studio. Thank you for coming in.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Well, last week we heard from Mark Williams. He joined us. And Joe, you're here. We're going to talk about some of your issues and talk about your candidacy. I also will put some questions to you that came up during Mark Williams' interview to give you a chance to respond. First of all, let our listeners know a little bit about you, why you are running in the Congressional District 2 in the primary election on the Democratic ballot.
Sure. Well, just by way of background, I've lived most of my life in Colorado since I was 5 years old. I have lived here in this congressional district actually for the last 16 years. I grew up in Colorado. I went to public schools here, met my wife here, went to CU Boulder undergrad and CU Boulder Law School. I also have had a real opportunity to serve our state and in particular the Boulder community. I was a co-founder of New Era Colorado. It's one of our largest nonprofits in this state, registered over 150,000 young voters. I served as a regent at the University of Colorado, represented this district, the second congressional district, for 6 years, where I fought for students and faculty and staff, and then also ran the state's Consumer Protection Agency for a couple of years, where I fought to protect the civil rights of every Coloradan and combat financial fraud. I consider myself a Coloradan through and through, but my story, like many others, is an immigrant story. My folks came here from Eritrea, a small war-torn country in East Africa, a lot of folks haven't heard of. They came here as refugees, and really, because of their sacrifice and the incredible freedoms and the opportunities that we have in the United States, we've been able to make it and really live the American dream in every sense of the phrase. And so to your question about why I'm running for Congress, I'm running for Congress because I really believe those freedoms and those opportunities are under attack like they've never been before, and that the fate of our republic right now as a democracy is at stake and at risk. And it stands on the shoulders of folks like your listeners who are engaged, who are, you know, resisting and pushing back. And I'd like to be a part of that resistance and fight for our progressive values in Washington.
Well, Colorado's second congressional district, it's most of Boulder County, not the entire part of the county. Also part of Grand County, Vail County, Larimer. I mean, it's quite a large area. What do you see as the main issues in your mind facing this congressional district?
Yeah, well, I first would say it's the most beautiful congressional district in the country. I would challenge anybody to contest that fact. I mean, it, as you said, 10 different counties everywhere from Larimer County up to the Wyoming border, places like Summit County and Clear Creek, Gilpin, Grand County, and then, of course, Boulder, and my wife and I live in Lafayette here in Boulder County. And what I would say is, again, because I've had a unique opportunity to serve, I've actually represented this congressional district for 6 years, and so have had a real opportunity to fight for the people of this district and to visit with them about their concerns and their hopes and their dreams. And I would say that there are a number of different issues that folks are concerned about. Of course, folks are concerned about health care. Although the Affordable Care Act has done much for the United States, people in our country and the ability to have millions of folks to have access to healthcare that they didn't have before, there are gaps, very large gaps. And you go to places like Summit County where folks are paying some of the highest rates with respect to the individual exchange, health premiums in the thousands of dollars per month, deductibles of $20,000, $30,000 a year, hard to call the product that they are purchasing insurance. And so from my perspective, universal health care really is the answer, Medicare for all, so that every family in this district has access and doesn't have to worry about whether they'll go bankrupt if, you know, God forbid, a loved one gets sick.
So just so we know what terms we're talking about, when you say you support Medicare for all, is that like a full single-payer system?
Correct. Yes. In addition, and this ties in, I think folks are very concerned about affordability generally, right? I mean, the ability to afford a home here in Boulder County, and that's something that is not unique to Boulder County. As a byproduct of the growth that we're experiencing as a state, you have those same concerns in places like Larimer County and Fort Collins or up in Breckenridge and Frisco. Again, a commonality for folks who are really struggling to make ends meet and be able to afford a place to live. And so there's much that our member of Congress can do at the federal level, fighting to increase funding for the National Affordable Housing Trust Fund so that we can better provide for the citizens in our state. So those are just a couple of examples. I would give you one more because it's certainly something I'm very passionate about and it's top of mind to me and I think a lot of people in this district, and that's gun violence. My wife and I are expecting our first child later this year, in August actually, a baby girl, which we're very excited about, and we think a lot about the world that she will inherit and the notion that parents have to worry about whether or not their child will make it home safe from school. So that is something that I've heard consistently across the district. It's why I am a proud supporter of gun violence prevention, an assault weapons ban, universal background checks, a red flag law, so that we can ultimately really ensure that our communities in this state are protected.
In terms of other issues facing the state, now you say you're a resident of Lafayette. Lafayette is one of the many Front Range communities dealing with fracking as an issue. What's
Yes.
your stance on that? Would you support a ban on fracking in the state of Colorado?
Yeah, so a couple things. One, I would say I come at this issue, I suspect like many of your listeners do, from the personal perspective of living, as you said, in Lafayette. And I think a lot about the groundwater. I think a lot about the air that our daughter will breathe. And in my view, I think local communities should have the ability to not only regulate oil and gas development in their communities, but ban it. And communities like Lafayette, actually, and Broomfield and others have chosen to do precisely that. Unfortunately, they've been thwarted by the state Supreme Court. I think that we need to change the composition of the legislature, that we need to regain a majority in the state Senate so that a number of these bills that have been proposed to bring local control back to the cities and the jurisdictions where they belong will actually become law. There are a variety of legislators, Mike Foote, Matt Jones, who have proposed bills that would do precisely that. I'm proud that they support my campaign. Unfortunately, those bills have died in the Republican-controlled state Senate. With respect to, so I think every listener, I would hope, to the extent that they are concerned about this issue, that they would help make sure that we retake the Senate so that we can make progress. With respect to federally, I would say there are a number of different things that we could do. There's a bill called the Keep It in the Ground Act, which would effectively ban all oil and gas development, including hydraulic fracturing, on all federal public lands in the United States. That is a bill that no member of Congress here in Colorado, Democrat or Republican, has signed on to. It's something that I would co-sponsor if I were lucky enough to be elected to represent this district.
There are people in Lafayette who are supportive of a climate bill of rights and a citizen climate bill of rights. Would you support something like that?
I'd have to learn more, and I guess I would want to talk with you more and with the folks who are engaged on that topic. Of course, I've been very engaged and well-versed on federal issues and the ability for our member of Congress here to make a lot of progress at the federal level. I'd want to visit with you more about that.
Well, one of the components of that was playing out certainly in Lafayette at a city council level was offering protections to activists who were involved or engaged in peaceful protest against the fracking industry, that they would be protected under the law, that they would not be arrested. Because we're seeing this happening now with some activists who were protesting at sites in Greeley being now civilly sued by the oil and gas industry over their protest. So do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I certainly don't think people should be civilly sued. I support peaceful protest. And so I, of course, am very, very focused with respect to the job that I'm running for on federal statutes that I think would go a long way in fighting climate change as the existential issue that I believe it is and something that I've been passionate about in my career for the better part of the last 10 years.
We're speaking with Joe Neguse today on KGNU. He is on the Democratic primary ballot for Colorado's 2nd Congressional District. The other candidate on that ballot is Mark Williams. We heard from him last week, and you can hear that interview online at kgnu.org. A lot of the conversation that's happening, certainly with Mark Williams, and when he was on, he categorized you as an establishment candidate, and I'm not using that term in a positive way. Your thoughts on being labeled as an establishment candidate?
I couldn't disagree more. It's unfortunate that my opponent has spent more time talking about me than himself and his record and his vision for the district. I'm very focused on my candidacy and our vision for this district and what I think we could accomplish together. I would say the notion that a 34-year-old black man running in Boulder, the son of African refugees, someone who's still paying off his student loans, who has served in this district in creating some very important progressive policy victories, the notion that that is establishment, I just couldn't disagree more. I am proud of my progressive record and proud of the work that I've done here in our district. And, I think it's important for the listeners and for voters more generally that to the extent that as they're deciding who to support, it's not enough to just listen to someone talk about what they will do. It's important to take an appraisal of what they've done and their record of service in the community that they seek to represent. And I'm very proud of mine.
Well, part of the narrative around establishment candidates is the issue of money in politics. And there has been discussion, and I wanted to give you a chance to respond to some of what was said during Mark Williams' interview about money that you've accepted as part of your campaign from PACs, and particularly PACs that would have ties maybe to the oil and gas industry, law firms that would represent the oil and gas industry. The inference or the connection that was made is that how can you then be an independent voice for Coloradoans if you have these monetary connections in terms of the PACs and people donating to your campaign?
Yeah, again, you know, I think it couldn't be further from the truth. And, you know, the good news is that listeners and voters more generally can access the information online, right? All of the donation information to both candidates, any candidate for that matter, is all disclosed. We haven't accepted any money from oil and gas PACs. And unfortunately, again,
or attorneys
our opponent,
that would represent the oil and gas industry.
What I'll say is a couple of things. As I said before, I think unfortunately what our opponent has done is spreaded a lot of misinformation around the money that we've received and the donations that we've received. So let me tell you a little bit about that. The vast majority of folks who donate to our campaign are small dollar donors here in this district. We have a higher percentage of folks who have donated from Colorado than our opponent does. So this notion that somehow, you know, that what he's peddling, I think, as you've described, I just don't find merit in. We have taken about 3% of the money that we've raised from corporate PACs, a few law firms who have donated, I will say, to a number of progressive leaders, people like Ed Perlmutter, Keith Ellison, Tulsi Gabbard, many others. And so the notion that they are any less progressive simply because they've received a donation from a lawyer that may have any variety of you know, different clients, I don't believe that to be true. You know, one particular example that my opponent has focused on quite a bit is Holland and Hart, which, as you, I'm sure, know, is a large, very large employer here in Boulder and is currently representing the city of Boulder in its fight against Xcel Energy with respect to the municipalization battle, something that I, of course, as the co-founder of New Era Colorado, am intimately familiar with. So, again, I think a lot of these attacks, you know, unfortunately, are just intellectually dishonest, and we're not going to take the bait. I mean, the political system is so toxic right now that I just don't think it can handle much more. And so from my perspective, I'm going to stay focused talking to folks about what I think we can achieve together and ultimately let the chips fall where they may.
Well, in terms of this issue of money in politics, a lot of people say this is a major political issue that candidates all need to take some type of position on. What is your position on money in politics? Outside of your particular candidacy in general, this issue of money and corporate influence in our political system?
I completely agree. I mean, I think there are a number of different structural obstacles to our democracy functioning the way that it should. Gerrymandering is one, voter suppression is another, and money in politics is another, sort of thinking of it as, you know, kind of three legs to the stool. I believe that Citizens United should be overturned by constitutional amendment, something I've supported for a very long time. I believe that there's much more we could do iteratively in terms of in the Congress to require better disclosure of spending. I believe that we should implement public financing of elections. It's worked quite well in a variety of different municipalities, as our listeners surely know. And I think it is something that we should be doing writ at large. I'm proud to have the support of a group that's fighting to end Citizens United. It's called End Citizens United, and they've endorsed my candidacy because they know that I will be a champion for campaign finance reform in the Congress.
We're speaking with Joan Neguse, who is on the Democratic primary ballot for Colorado's 2nd Congressional District. That's currently this seat held by Jared Polis. Of course, Jared Polis now in the gubernatorial race. And you can hear the interview we did with Mark Williams last week. That's online at kgnu.org. The issue of climate change is absolutely huge. How do you see climate change right now in terms of importance of what's happening right now in the country and indeed the world?
You know, about a year ago when I started this campaign, I was asked by a reporter what was the kind of most important issue in my mind, what would be the defining issue of both my candidacy and to the extent that I was lucky enough to serve. And my answer was fighting climate change. I believe this is a existential threat. And I say that, again, as a millennial, as someone who would be one of the youngest members of Congress if for elected, and again, as someone who's also thinking about his own family and the world that our daughter will inherit. It's one of the main reasons that we created New Era Colorado. I mean, the premise was to get more young people involved in our politics and to engage them by talking to them about the issues that they care about most. And climate change is top of mind for any young person that you visit with. So there is so much we could be doing at the federal level. Of course, with this Republican Congress and the Trump administration, they are rolling back decades and decades of progress. I believe that ultimately to solve this problem, you have to price carbon. And I'm a strong supporter at the federal level a very decisive action to price or tax carbon. There are a variety of different legislative vehicles you could use to get there. In addition, I think we have to end the subsidies for the oil and gas industry. The tax code is rife with a variety of subsidies and tax credits and deductions and so forth, intangible drilling and the like. Those all should be ended. I think to the extent that you end those, we will see renewables continue to take off in the way that they already have in transforming our economy.
Well, in terms of renewables, another connected issue with the current administration is tariffs on solar panels coming in from China. And a lot of people were concerned about the impact on the renewable energy industry here in the US. In terms of trade, look at some of the major issues right now that we're seeing in terms of trade agreements, the TPP, NAFTA. What are your thoughts on some of these international trade agreements and what needs to happen?
Sure. So with respect to the first part of your question around the tariffs on the solar panels, I think that the concern is well-founded. I mean, there are a variety of employers, and including here in Boulder County, folks in the renewable space and the solar space who are impacted and will be impacted by those tariffs, which I think are deeply short-sighted. With respect to trade more generally, I'm a firm believer in fair trade, not just simply free trade. And I think the reality is there have been a variety of agreements at the federal level. You mentioned TPP as an example that did not incorporate, in my view, the principles of fair trade, and that is to say the ability to have environmental protections, the ability to ensure that we are not, you know, subject to ISDS panels and tribunals and so forth, right, that it can in many ways undermine the laws that we have here on our books with respect to consumer protections or worker protections or environmental protections and the like. So there's much to be said with respect to making sure, again, as I said, that those principles guide any decision that the Congress is forced or, you know, that is asked to make, I should say, with respect to new trade agreements that might come down the pike.
In terms of existing trade agreements, though, what are your thoughts on the TPP? Is that something you're supportive of?
Well, so the TPP, I did not support it when it was proposed. I don't believe it's any longer pending before the Congress, and I don't anticipate that coming up again. But no, it was not something I supported.
You're listening to Jonah Goose here on Community Radio KGNU. He's a candidate in Colorado's 2nd Congressional District. He'll be on the Democratic primary ballot, or is on the ballot, because the ballots are hitting people's mailboxes this week. We have talked about trade agreements. We've talked about energy issues. What about interventions in foreign countries and war? Because war spending has been hugely impactful on the country and other countries as well. In terms of the US and its role on the international stage, what are your thoughts right now in the US as in the military interventions that we're seeing and in terms of the troops that we're seeing deployed in other countries? Give us an idea of what you would do as a congressperson if you were representing Colorado.
Sure. So I think there's two issues that I would touch on, one funding issue and one broader policy point. With respect to the funding issue, I mean, there is no question. I mean, the United States spends more on defense spending than the next 8 countries combined. There's a Overseas Contingency Operations Account, the OCOA. It's billions and billions of dollars effectively used as a slush fund to fund any variety of overseas operations. So there is much to be said, and I would certainly be passionate about ensuring that the bloated defense budget, or I should say that OCOA account that I mentioned, is not subject to the prior budget caps that used to be in law. So all a very long-winded way, I suppose, of saying that I believe that we should go in and cut defense spending. I mean, there are a variety of places where I think you could make cuts to the defense budget. It's just incredibly, incredibly bloated, as you've described. On the policy front, what I would say, there's an interesting quote from James Madison in the Federalist Papers, where he is, and I believe it's instructive to your question, where he says that the Constitution supposes what the history of all governments demonstrates, and that is that the executive is the branch most interested in war and most prone to it, right? Which is fundamentally why the Congress has the power to declare war. It's why that power is in Article 1, right, and not in the articles governing the executive branch. And unfortunately, this Congress and Congress for the better part of the last 2 decades has abdicated its authority, found in both the Constitution and the War Powers Act of the 1970s, to exert oversight and to ultimately satisfy its constitutional obligations, and has essentially given those to the executive. There's a congresswoman by the name of Barbara Lee, who you may be familiar with. She represents Berkeley in California. She was the only member of Congress to vote against the AUMF, the Authorization of Use of Military Force, in 2001. one out of 535. She's endorsed our campaign. She's actually coming to Colorado next Monday. I encourage any listeners that would like to come visit and meet her in person to do so. And she's done that because she knows that I will be a progressive champion on this issue with respect to rescinding and reforming the AUMF that has been pending, that has led to a wide variety of overseas deployments, the types of which you just described.
Would you call for troops to be withdrawn from?
Yeah, so I believe we should withdraw our troops from Afghanistan by way of example. And as I said, I believe that the AUMF itself should be repealed and should be reformed, and that the Congress can then exercise its constitutional duty in terms of precisely deciding when and where troops should be deployed.
In terms of your own personal history, you said that your parents were from Eritrea, and Eritreans are caught up in this massive refugee crisis that we are seeing playing out to tragic consequences, and people crossing the Mediterranean, people being caught up in wars in their own country. A lot of people say that's largely driven by outside interests, the US being one of that. In terms of refugees that we are not accepting here in the US, if you look at, certainly compared to other countries, Germany, for example, there's just been barely any refugees accepted into the US. And now, of course, with the travel ban, you have certain countries that are just completely blocked. How would you, given your own personal history, address what's happening now globally with the refugee crisis?
Immigration and in general, the inhumane treatment of immigrants in our country and of refugees is one of the driving reasons behind my candidacy. I mean, I spent a lot of time last summer thinking about how different my life would have been had my parents tried to immigrate to the United States 35 years later with Donald Trump in the White House. And I think about the refugees all across the world, Syrians, Eritreans, others, who are no different than my parents. I mean, people who are literally just trying to rebuild their shattered lives and live their dreams, who won't have that opportunity. I think we will look back generally, both at our policy towards refugees and our policy towards immigrants, what's happening on our southern border, separating parents and children. I think we will look back at this moment 10 years, 20 years from now with utter shame for where our country has gone. And I think the only way we will change it is if people of good faith stand up to say that this is not us. It's not reflective of who we are. It's not reflective of the type of country that we live in, and change it. And so this would certainly be an issue that I would be a passionate advocate for at the federal level. I think it is a disgrace that we're not accepting refugees from a variety of different countries. And again, obviously my vested interest is someone who has lived this through my family's experience. As you can tell, it's something I'm very passionate about.
Is there legislation pending right now that you're aware of, or is there legislation being discussed by potential future Congress people that you see that could address what's happening with the refugees, but also what's happening with immigration? Because in Colorado's 2nd Congressional District, there are several immigrants in sanctuary in faith-based communities right here in the state of Colorado, and some being within this particular congressional district. Is there legislation that you're supportive of right now or that you would like to see introduced that could do something to very much tangibly address what's happening right now?
Yeah. Yes, on both fronts. With respect to refugees, there is talk of federal legislation. I don't believe there's any federal legislation actually pending, but in terms of including that as part of a larger immigration package. But right now, the arbitrary caps that have been set into law are abhorrent. And, the religious and in my view, ethnicity-based animus that's reflective in those caps and those total bans on refugees is abhorrent. With respect to immigration more broadly, I think we need a Clean Dream Act. I think we need to protect DACA recipients. I think we need comprehensive immigration reform. And there are a wide variety of statutory proposals that are pending in the Congress that have been pending for quite a while. Unfortunately, we have a Congress that lacks the political will, and in particular, Republican leadership within the House that lacks the political will in the Senate to do anything about it. So, as I said, this is something I'm passionate about. It's something I would be a leader on in Congress.
Jonah Goose is with us here on KGNU. He's a former CU regent, former executive director of the Colorado Department of Regulatory Agencies. He's currently a candidate that's on the Democratic primary ballot for Colorado's 2nd Congressional District. Mark Williams, the other candidate on that ballot, joined us last week. You can hear that interview at kgnu.org. Joe, you did say earlier on in the interview that you want people to look at people's records of what has been achieved and not just focus on what people are saying they will achieve if they get to Congress. Can you give listeners tangible, concrete examples of what you have achieved in your public service that have really impacted the people of Colorado?
Sure. Well, so as I mentioned, both through my nonprofit activism, as a Creating New Era Colorado, we register over 150,000 young voters in our state. Pre-registration for 16 and 17-year-olds, which is a law that was enacted back in 2013, is a law that we helped champion and that I testified in support of. It is now led to tens of thousands of young folks, high schoolers, people very inspired by what's happening with respect to the gun violence debate, now pre-registering to vote, getting involved earlier at a younger age. As a regent, I led the way with respect to resolution convincing Republican and Democratic colleagues to support a resolution to support in-state tuition for undocumented students. And so when I talk about having a humane policy towards immigrants and those who are undocumented, you can see in my record that it's something that I actually have worked for and have been an advocate for in the past. As at the state's Consumer Protection Agency, we launched the first state's online discrimination complaint medium. So essentially making it easier for folks to be able to file a complaint of discrimination if they are a victim and were victimized in their work based on their gender or sex or race. Those are just a couple of examples, millions of dollars that we recovered at the state's Consumer Protection Department, sort of the counterpart to Elizabeth Warren's Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, again, on behalf of people in our state. So to me, that work matters, that service matters, and it has defined my life. But, you know, the fight for the future of our country and really the soul of our country is in the halls of the United States Congress. And I do think, look, we have a president right now, right, who never ran for office, who never served in office, who had no interest in public policy, and who is now wreaking havoc within our federal government, filling it with cabinet agencies. Many of your listeners probably have seen the interview of Betsy DeVos, our Secretary of Education, who revealed in 60 Minutes that she knows very little about education policy. I think right now what we need are more people of good faith who have experience in building coalitions and working on progressive policy so that we can actually get things done for the people of our state. And that's why I'm running, and I would be honored to have the privilege to be able to represent the people of this district.
Just to touch on education, you are a former CU regent. What are your thoughts on what's happening right now, particularly with third-level education, accessibility and affordability, and who gets to go to college and because of economic circumstances or whatever community you happen to be from, that is a barrier for so many people? How could that be addressed?
Yeah, very much so. You're precisely right. And unfortunately, the Higher Education Reauthorization Act, which was scheduled to go this year, of course, I highly doubt will include anything that that I or your listeners, I suspect, would agree with in terms of providing a more accessible education. I am a firm believer, and my belief is rooted in my own personal experiences and that of my family, that public higher education remains the one ticket to upward mobility in our economy. And I say that as the product of public schools, K-12, and of CU law school and CU undergrad, but it is far too expensive for too many, and so many in the middle class, in lower income levels, are completely priced out. And so, from my perspective, I think we should have debt-free college. I think that at the end of the day, if we truly care about providing equality of opportunity, so that every person has a fair chance to be able to succeed and live their dreams, then we ought to be willing to make that investment. And so it's something I would support at the federal level.
Well, we just have a minute or two left. What are the opportunities for listeners to engage with you, maybe on a personal level, and to see interactions with the other candidates? Because there was a concern that was raised when we had Mark Williams on last week that there might be a reluctance to engage in debates as opposed to just separate forums. What are your thoughts on that? And what are the opportunities for people to hear more about your positions?
Sure. So with respect to the debates question, we've had, I think, 6 or 7 debates. We've debated in Fort Collins. We've debated in Broomfield. We've debated in Boulder. There was actually a debate a few weeks ago. It was on the front page of the Daily Camera, the Boulder Rotary. Very much enjoyed those debates. We've taken a clean campaign primary pledge, and so we have stayed very focused on my platform and our record and our vision. Our opponent has not, and so is engaged in some pretty scurrilous and negative attacks, which, as I said before, in my view, contribute to the overall toxicity of the politics of that we are so accustomed to now in the era of Trump, which is something I'm fighting against. And so I am certainly looking forward to more opportunities to be able to engage with folks. I would encourage listeners to send us an email. You can reach us at jonahgooseforcongress@gmail.com. You can go online at jonahgooseforcongress.com. You can send us a Facebook message or a tweet. Happy to engage with you, the listeners, directly. We also have a number of different events scheduled, meet and greets, opportunities for voters to come by to listen, and also, more importantly, an opportunity for me to listen to them so that I can hear more about their concerns and what they'd like to see in their next representative.
Well, people can find out more online, jonahgooseforcongress.com.
Yes.
We link to that at kgnu.org. And we'll also have the audio of that Rotary Club debate. We'll put that online as well, so people get a full sense of what's happening in Colorado's 2nd Congressional District. But Jonah Goose is one of the candidates on the Democratic primary ballot for Colorado's 2nd Congressional District, the seat currently held by Jared Polis. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.